A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on August 15, 1993, entitled, Can We Talk? The scripture readings are Genesis 11, verses 1 through 9, and Acts 2, verses 1 through 13. The texts for the sermon are Genesis 11, verse 7, and Acts 2, verses 6 through 8. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Can we talk? I saw that as a head of an article about the church, but it reminded me of Joan Rivers, who wasn't successful in succeeding Johnny Carson, but who was successful in putting that statement into our psyche. Can we talk? Something personal, intimate, a little gossipy is about to come. Can we talk? But you know, it's a serious question. Serious question. Can we talk? The world is imperiled because we can't talk as we ought, as human beings. And communication is absolutely essential if there is to be community. There can be no community without conversation, without talking, without listening to one another. And our world is in serious difficulty. I don't know if it's worse than ever it was. Maybe it's not. Maybe the world was made up of a lot of separate communities, and maybe there was communication within. But now we live in a day in which the globe is shrunk to the size at which we are in communication or in contact, really, with the world. What goes on a half a world away can no longer remain a matter of indifference for me. We are indeed a global community, and therefore community by communication is absolutely essential for the well-being of our world. Communication, talking, listening. In that 11th chapter of the book of Genesis, where we have the Creator and His creation, we have, after the flood, the same old human obstreperousness, and the human society saying, let us engage in a project to build a tower up to heaven, which we sense was the Hebrew storyteller's way of telling us that this was a human project without reference to God. Maybe this was the first attempt to build the secular city. This was a human project in autonomy. The whole opening, all that opening part of Genesis deals with the Creator and the creation, and the creation and creatures' unwillingness to live in the harmony and the unity that was envisioned by the Creator. And so in this human project of autonomy, apart from the Creator, God says, that project's got to be foiled. Let's go down and confuse their language. And the whole project dissolves because they can't talk. They can't speak to each other. They are no longer listening. The text could actually be, they could not hear one another. The world is in trouble when we cannot hear one another. And our world today, as I suppose I've been saying, perhaps on the point of tiring you, our world today is in peril because we do not listen to each other. Discourse has deteriorated. Dialogue is absent. And rather, we shout from extreme left and extreme right, and we miss each other. We are not listening to each other. So the question, can we talk, is a very serious question. Our world is imperiled by the inability to communicate on the pressing social issues of our day. And we have a polarization in our society. And I suppose that one could say that that both extremes are guilty, whether on the left or on the right. But some years ago, I think it was Clinton Rossiter who said, you know, if you have a spectrum of right and left, my right, your left, but if this is my right and this is my left, it's not like the left and the right are separated at the extremes of that spectrum of opinion. It's instead of seeing a line, rather to envision a circle. And the right and the left are right up here next to each other. The right and the left, the extremes in human society, the extremes of opinion and action, are really blood brothers. The militant mind, the adversarial spirit, the deterioration of language, the inciting of fear and eventually violence is the consequence of a kind of mindset and posture that denies community. I got in the mail this week some junk mail. Maybe you got it too. It sort of irritates me that for 14 cents this whole bundle could come to me. For 14 cents. I think I will talk to Clinton about that. But anyway, this came from the Christian Coalition. And on the back I have the picture of Pat Robertson. And this is one of those congressional scorecards. And for sending in a little contribution, I could get this regularly. And I would know what every congressman voted on every issue. And that's okay. The right or the left has a right to speak their mind and marshal their opinion. But what bothers me about this is this purports to be a Christian thing, and its language is an abuse of dialogue and discourse with liberals and left-wing radicals now in control of both the White House and the Congress. Well, come on. I mean, that kind of language that incites to fear and builds hostility is destructive of community. I read this long letter which appeals for my funds, which they will not get. But the strategy of the Clinton administration is to radically transform this nation as quickly as possible before the American people realize it. You see, there's a vast conspiracy going on, and I'm really nudged toward paranoia to help him carry out his social revolution. And it doesn't get any better. Most Christians have been silent for too long. It is this silence that has allowed the slaughter. You get the slaughter of 1.5 million unborn. With anti-family radicals now in control of both the White House and Congress, Christians cannot afford to sit on the sidelines any longer. And it goes on that way. I'm offended by this. To do this in the name of Christ as a follower of Jesus is to abuse Jesus. Followers of Jesus cannot use that kind of language. Ought not to be about inciting people, no matter what your opinion is on those issues, to be able to discourse and to dialogue and to speak. That, of course, is absolutely necessary for a healthy society and for the building of a world community or a national community. But this kind of thing is destructive of that very thing. It uses language in an abusive way and appeals to the worst and the lowest in us. And so I'm concerned about the breakdown of communication, which is destructive of community in our world. The social issues that press upon us need to be discussed. We need to hear one another. We need to listen to one another. But we do not need to shout at each other from opposite ends of the spectrum. Scott Peck, in his book, most of you perhaps know Scott Peck through A Road Less Traveled, a well-traveled book, but he also wrote A Different Drum. in which he calls us to world community, in which he's deeply concerned about these issues. And he says that most social gatherings are not community, but are pseudo-community. And he defines pseudo-community as, well, the rules by which any hostess operates. If you have a dinner party or any kind of a gathering, the rules are, don't bring up anything that will offend anybody. And if anybody does bring up something that offends, don't let it show that it bothers you. And if it appears that there may be something emerging that could cause a difference of opinion, for goodness sakes, change the topic right away. Now, those are the rules that any hostess knows for a smooth and serene and very boring evening. But you know, that's the way I was raised. That's the way I was raised. Well, I have to be a bit careful now because my sisters hear the tapes, they hear the sermons on tape, and because they monitor these sermons, that's why I've remained Orthodox all my ministry. So I have to be a little careful when I begin to talk about my family, but we were raised this way. You don't say it. You don't say it to one another. You kind of swallow it. But when you swallow it, something inside you dies. Or maybe something begins to build up. And there's not a freedom of relationship, a freedom of intercourse. So, you're civil, you're courteous, and do everything not to ruffle the feathers and to put oil on troubled waters. I can hear some of you just now, you're saying, yeah, but that's, I like it that way. After all, is that wrong? Do you always have to say the truth? Do you always have to say it? Can't you just hold it down, stifle yourself? I know, so there must be a golden mean here somewhere, but I must say to you, I think Scott Peck is right. He said, we use community very loosely. For example, the community of Grand Haven or of Spring Lake or of Holland or Grand Rapids. That's not community. It's a common tax base, but it's not community. It's not where people really engage one another. It's not where there is genuine encounter with one another. And most of our social gatherings are polite, civil, courteous gatherings of superficial relationship, never really getting down to community. And he is going around the country trying to lead people into deeper community, and it's a painful process. I have to, you know, I admit that I am not practicing what I preach this morning. It's hard for me. Because if you get below the superficial level, if you really delve down so that there can be some kind of intimate connection, that's scary. But Scott Peck says in the groups, the workshops that he leads, they move from pseudo-community to chaos. Because if once it is ever triggered where people really begin to speak about the things that they believe and the things that they care about and the things that offend them and that irritate them, there is some electricity and some fire, and it can be chaotic, and that's rather uncomfortable. But he claims, and I think he's right, that we'll probably never get down to that deeper level without going through that stage. But that is only a stage two. Another stage, a third stage, is the stage of emptying. And that one's really painful. Because what one does in the stage of emptying, and he uses a lot of silence where he just forces such a group to be alone with their own thoughts and face themselves, in emptying, I do empty myself of my agenda. I empty myself of my pet project, of my biases and my prejudices. I try to face myself honestly. And I try to let it go. My ideologies, my theologies, all those things that make up the structure of my security, I let it go. And that is really scary. But he maintains, I think correctly, that without such a process, I'll never get to community, which is a relationship in which diversity is accepted and even celebrated, where we can really talk, where I really listen, where you hear me. It seems to me that community is exactly what God intends for humankind. That's why I read the story of Pentecost. Luke very obviously writes the story of Pentecost against the foil of the story of the Tower of Babel. God confused the language there, and the human project in autonomy was brought to nothing. But the gift of the Spirit in Pentecost was to create a community in which the miracle perhaps was not in the speaking. There were tongues of ecstasy in the New Testament, but I think on Pentecost the miracle was really in the ear rather than in the tongue. They heard the story of the mighty acts of God, and they were amazed. I read all of those long names in order that you might get a picture of that tremendous diversity gathered there in Jerusalem, and all of them said, "Listen, we hear. We're hearing the same thing. We're understanding." They were brought together into a community because of communication. There was a breakthrough, which is the gift of the Spirit of God. The promise of Pentecost is the building of community through communication, through listening, hearing one another. And so the question, can we talk, is a very serious question. And it points us to the promise of Pentecost and the intention of God for the human family. Scott Peck maintains that the church is a pseudo-community in most cases. Most congregations, pseudo-communities. I think he's probably right. He suggests that when you're in chaos, you have two alternatives. You can move to organization, or you can move to community. Organization saves people from chaos. And as I reflected on that, I thought, that's exactly what happened in the early church. It was a Jesus movement. It was empowered, energized by the Spirit of God. It was a Jesus movement. But a movement's chaotic. A movement is amorphous. You can never get your handle on it. Never get a handle on it. Never get your arms around it. So what did the church do? It did what probably is inevitable, what we all do, probably what is necessary to do. It moved into organization. I can remember years ago teaching young people catechism and saying what a wonderful thing it was that the church came into a period of writing creeds. But why did it write creeds? It wrote creeds to say this and not that. And it wrote creeds to say you're in and you're out. And it developed a whole moral structure which said this is right and that is wrong. And it defined and it earmarked and it determined drawing lines and circles that included and excluded. In its organization, it became proficient. In its organization, it became successful. So successful that within 300 years, it was established as the religion of the Roman Empire. Clergy, priesthood, creeds, liturgies. But when Scott Peck said that out of chaos, you can flee to organization, I thought, dear God, that's what happened to the church. Easier to flee into organization than it is to move into community. In his book with Daily Devotionals, Frederick Buechner, who's had some experience with the AA groups, talks about Alcoholics Anonymous, which is a contemporary movement modeled on the church, which has discovered community. And he describes it. We know somewhat about it. But toward the end, he says, you can't help thinking that something like this is what the church is meant to be and maybe once was before it got to be big business. And then he says, the recovering person can go anywhere in the world and expect to find a meeting, and he can go there and he can tell his story and find support. He said, I wonder about us who might go off to some far corner. Would we just look up any corner church knowing we could tell our story and find support? Oh, to be really honest, friends, the last place I want to be honest is in church. I think Christ Community has made some real strides in that direction. Thank God for that. But I got to tell you, the church becoming the guardian of morality, the bastion of theological correctness, the church defining, dotting I's, crossing T's, drawing lines, is not the first place in the world I would want to go as your old average sinner telling my story. AA has discovered what the church started out to be, where I didn't have to measure up, where I would not be measured, but where I could just come as I am and tell my story and find support and whatever I need to get through the day. That's what community is. It is that breakthrough. The breakthrough of our superficial civility. The breakthrough of our ideological barriers. It is the willingness to reveal and to confront, to talk, and to hang in there with one another until we experience that communion at a deeper level and are able to celebrate our diversity embraced in a greater unity. It's not easy. Peck says, most congregations are cliques. The wisdom of the Institute for Church Growth in Pasadena, California says if you want to be successful in starting a church, target a homogeneous population. Get people that are alike. And doesn't that deny the very essence of the gospel, which is to break down every barrier, to remove all alienation, and to bind people together from all of the diversity of the human scene? God calls us to community, to be with one another, to hang in there with one another, to listen to one another, to hear one another. Dear friends, can we talk?